This is Audible.
Simon & Schuster Audio presents The House of My Mother, A Daughter's Quest for Freedom by Sherry Franke, read by the author.
To anybody who has been silenced, gaslit, abused, or lonely, you are stronger than you know. May earthly and heavenly angels lift you up. I would lead you and bring you into the house of my mother, she who used to teach me. Song of Solomon, chapter 8, verse 2, New American Standard Bible. Introduction. Finally. August 30th, 2023. It was a Wednesday, the start of a new college year, and I was slumped at my cramped desk, drowning in a sea of syllabi and first-week reading assignments. I skimmed the pages, but my mind refused to engage, thoughts always circling back to my 5 siblings. A year had passed since I'd heard their voices, seen their faces, and the thought of them trapped in that house was eating me alive. Despite all my efforts, the countless phone calls, the desperate pleas to anyone who would listen, it seemed like there was nothing we could do to remove them from harm's way. My phone rang, our neighbor's name flashing on the screen. My heart skipped a beat. Each call from this neighbor represented a lifeline. It meant an update about the kids. It meant that they were still alive. "Sherry, the police are at your mother's house." The words exploded through the speaker, no time for hello. "They've got guns out. They're about to bust down the door." My heart seized in my chest as vivid, horrifying images flooded my mind. Tiny body bags being carried out of my mother's home by faceless figures in uniforms. "It's happened," came the thought. "They're dead." In a daze, I grabbed my car keys and bolted. The drive from my student apartment to my mother's house in Springville usually took 20 minutes, but today it was an eternity compressed into moments of blind panic. I hadn't been back to that house since Ruby had disowned me a year prior. Ruby, the self-anointed saint of motherhood. Ruby, who had turned my life into a surreal version of the Truman Show for her social media disciples. Ruby, who had subjected me and my siblings to her twisted interpretation of crime and punishment all our lives, until Jody came along, adding terrifying new flavors of sadism to the regime. Jody, our family's very own cult leader, a false prophet who swept into our lives like a hurricane, turning my mother into a fawning, starstruck acolyte who lapped up her every demented word like it was holy water. My father, once our anchor, had been banished, leaving Ruby and Jody to rule unchallenged over my 4 youngest siblings who were still there with them. I drove through the familiar streets of Springville, a dull, all-too-familiar anger simmering within me as I navigated the quiet of suburbia. Why did no one have any information on the children? Why had they been pulled out of school? Why couldn't anyone shield them from harm? Countless warnings had already been sent to the Division of Child and Family Services, DCFS. To law enforcement, by me, and by concerned neighbors. I'd been shouting from the rooftops for a year. Yet, despite the glaring signs of trouble, no action had been taken. The red flags we'd raised might as well have been invisible, and the system that was supposed to protect my siblings had left them at the mercy of 2 women drunk on delusion and unchecked power. I turned onto our sleepy cul-de-sac and encountered a war zone. Police cruisers formed a barricade of flashing lights. SWAT teams prowled our front lawn, neighbors huddled on the sidewalks, fear and fascination on their faces. I got out of my car and an officer blocked my path, his face a tombstone. "I can't let you go past this point, miss." "But that's my house," I pleaded. "My siblings, are they safe? Where are they?" Snippets of radio chatter teased me. Was that my brother's name I heard? "Please," I begged, "will someone tell me what's happening?" An officer approached, his tone urgent. "Miss, can you provide us with a layout of the house? Any safes, guns?" Through my tears, I gave him the information he needed. 7 bedrooms, 6 bathrooms, where we once jostled for mirror space. Some guns locked away. A pantry that could outlast an apocalypse. Each room echoing with the ghosts of who we once were. Then chaos erupted. The front door splintered under the battering ram's assault. Officers swarmed in like angry hornets. I stood, rooted to the spot, watching. God, please let them be alive, I prayed. A surreal thought bubbled up. This moment, this climax of my family's descent into madness, needed to be documented, preserved, and shared on social media. Just like every forced smile, every staged perfection had been, too. I pulled out my phone, my hands steady despite the madness around me. Frame shot. Snap. The caption crystallized in my mind, a single word that carried the weight of years. Finally. Upload to Instagram. Share. This nightmare was born on social media. It should die there, too. Part 1. The Garden of Earthly Delights. Chapter 1. Sealed. I have a recurring dream. It always starts so beautifully. Ethereal light bathes rolling fields as far as the eye can see. A sense of profound peace washes over me as I realize this must be heaven. My earthly journey has ended. The landscape shifts, familiar yet otherworldly. Loved ones I've lost appear in the distance, their faces radiant. I move toward them, weightless, unburdened, embracing them with tears of joy. This is paradise, I think. This is peace. Then I see those eyes, cold and unyielding, boring into me with a power as ancient as the stars. It's her, Ruby. Suddenly, God's voice booms around me, shaking the very foundations of heaven. My child, you were wrong to defy your mother. I jolt awake, heart pounding, and for a moment the terror lingers. Even in the afterlife, will I never be free from her? My mother was born Ruby Griffiths on January 18, 1982, in Logan, Utah, the first child of five to Chad and Jennifer Griffiths, whose families had been devout members of The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, LDS, for generations. When Ruby was young, her family relocated to Roy, Utah, a small city where the LDS Church shaped nearly every aspect of life. In this tight-knit community, days revolved around scripture study, clean living, and above all else, family. That is, after all, the cornerstone of our faith. As the eldest in a strict, conservative home, Ruby's childhood was less about play and more about responsibility, and she was tasked with helping to raise her younger siblings. I can easily imagine a young Ruby, spine straight and eyes determined, navigating her family's expectations with a sense of righteous purpose, eagerly anticipating the day when she would have a family of her own, relishing the thought of finally being the one to make the rules and shape her home exactly as she saw fit. For Ruby, motherhood wasn't just a future role. It was the pinnacle of her aspirations, the one thing she had always wanted for herself above all else. Her reverence for motherhood is not uncommon in the LDS theology I was raised with. Becoming a mother, in my faith, is a spiritual calling of the highest order, a chance to emulate the divine and participate in the grand tapestry of creation. Perhaps that's why the physical toll, the discomforts of pregnancy, the searing pain of childbirth, weren't seen as obstacles to be overcome or burdens to be endured by Ruby. Rather, they were sacred trials, opportunities to demonstrate her unwavering faith in God's plan and secure her place in the celestial afterlife alongside the hallowed ancestors who had walked this path before her. As soon as she turned 18, the starting gun went off in Ruby's race toward eternal exaltation, and my mother embarked on her mission to populate not just her earthly home, but her heavenly mansion as well. First, though, she needed a husband. In the year 2000, when 18-year-old Ruby first set foot on the Utah State University campus, she had one thing on her mind: manhunting. Yes, she had chosen accounting as her major, but college was never about learning for Ruby. It was about finding a mate so she could get married, start a family, and begin fulfilling her divine purpose ASAP. On a color-coded vision board, Ruby outlined the key qualities she required in a man: 5 inches taller than me, handsome, car paid off, engineer. Her own father was an engineer, so perhaps she liked the idea of history repeating itself. It goes without saying, her ideal man had to be devoted to the church. Enter my father, Kevin Frankie, a senior living on campus, 4 years older at 22, on the brink of completing his civil engineering degree, and very much a product of his LDS faith. He stood 5 inches taller than Ruby, check, had a chiseled jawline, handsome, double check. And his keen intellect and ambition hinted at a promising future. Plus, he seemed so nice. Exuding genuine kindness, Kevin had a laid-back aura that was a balm to Ruby's intense spirit. Ruby had no interest in power struggles, after all. What she needed was someone relaxed enough to let her take the reins without too much resistance, a co-pilot content to let her navigate their shared journey, pay the bills, and give her the children she longed for. Born on October 9, 1978, in Ogden, Utah, Kevin was the youngest of seven siblings, trailing his nearest brother by a full 12 years. Kevin's late arrival made him something of an anomaly. While his siblings were navigating high school and beyond, he was still learning to tie his shoes, and his days unfolded in a haze of neighborhood adventures and sports on TV, overseen by parents who'd done it all before. Kevin's mom didn't like to cook or bake. Life revolved around pre-made meals, TV, and talk of faith. The household was generally relaxed without a lot of rules, an easygoing environment that sculpted Kevin into a gentle, even-keeled sort of guy. Like Ruby, Kevin was devoted to finding his spiritual partner, a future mother to the children he hoped to raise in the gospel. But he had come to college to learn, secure his future, and had been in no hurry to meet his wife, until he laid eyes on Ruby, that is. He saw her first, working the room at a Welcome Week hot dog social on campus. The undisputed queen bee, Ruby flitted from man to man, her flirtatious confidence unlike anything he'd ever seen before. It helped that she was naturally beautiful, blonde, with a huge dazzling smile and a svelte figure. Ruby was just his type. As she methodically auditioned potential husbands, like a director casting her leading man, Kevin sensed the clock was ticking. Ruby was a prize catch, and if he didn't somehow distinguish himself in the crowd, he'd wind up just another also-ran in Ruby's race to the altar.
So that was a sample of The House of My Mother, A Daughter's Quest for Freedom by Shari Frank, narrated by Shari, the length 7 hours and 9 minutes, unabridged, released the 7th of January and published by Simon & Schuster Audio, UK. And that, along with loads and loads, thousands of other titles, are available from audible.co.uk. To become a member of Audible and receive a whole host of offers and benefits and pay in a variety of ways, you, a friend or family member, can go to the website, and that's audible.co.uk. You can Google that too. You can call the customer support number, which is a free phone number. It's 0800 496 2455. It's open from 7 in the morning till 11 every evening, and it's the same number if you have any problems with joining or the website. If you'd like to request a new audiobook to hear about, then give me a call, and that's 07500 870689, or email updatetnstoke@gmail.com, and we'll have another title for you when we return early in February.